Hello and welcome. My name is Chris Allen and this podcast is brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. November is Islamophobia Awareness Month and I caught up with Abdullah Saif, who is from Muslim Engagement and Development. And first of all, I asked him how he would define Islamophobia.
So the definition we work with is the APPG definition, which is the All Party Parliamentary Group on British Muslims. They set out a definition which we at MEND support, and we've written our own guidelines in a book called More Than Words. And the definition itself goes as this: Islamophobia is rooted in racism, and it's a type of racism which targets expressions of Muslimness or perceived Muslimness. So that's the actual phrasing that that the APPG definition has come with. And it's one that actually has been adopted quite widely across the country with councils and political parties across the country, except the Conservative Party of England and Wales. I must say the Conservative Party of Scotland has actually accepted it,
right.
But the England and Wales Party hasn't.
And, you know, we haven't got them here to sort of defend why they're not accepting it, but there seems to be quite universal acceptance. And you've got an all-parliamentary group accepting that as a definition, and obviously you've made some great progress there. It's interesting what you said there about perceived Muslimness. Explain a little bit more why the perceived bit's important.
Well, we've seen whenever an incident happens of any kind of hate crime and you call the police, what happens is the police will then ask you as the victim, why do you think it happened? And so you would then say, I think it happened because of X and Y. And when it comes to an Islamophobic attack, you would say, I was attacked with the person because of my Muslim faith or Muslim appearance or something like this. But what would happen sometimes is that you'll get someone who's not of the Muslim faith, but they have markers of a profile of a Muslim, so they might have a beard or some kind of like head covering or something.
Right.
And the person might themselves be like Sikh, for example. And we've had a number of this instances where a Sikh person was a victim. They'd call and they'd say, I was attacked because the guy thought I was Muslim. And so this perceived Muslimness is also captured within the term of Islamophobia.
Right. And that's important to pick up there, because it seems to be Muslims particularly are being identified as a subject to attack. It seems that they're sort of being focused on by many groups, far right groups, whereas perhaps other faiths such as the Sikh faith are avoiding it, but people will attack Sikhs because they think they're Muslims.
Well, yeah, I mean, just talking about the number of attacks we've had, I mean, the recent hate crime stats have come out, so these are a measure of records between March and March of each year, and then they're produced in October, I think usually during hate crime week, which is like mid to end of October. And so we saw an increase in Islamophobic attacks from the COVID years until compared to this one. So we've seen an increase. We've seen I think the stats show that 2 out of 5 victims of religious hate crime are Muslims, and within the West Midlands it's 53% of victims of religiously motivated hate crimes are Muslims. So so we're seeing the numbers increase. We're seeing the reports increase as well. So that's, you got to kind of take that as a kind of like a small win in that people are actually reporting it. But the numbers are going up, unfortunately.
Sometimes when the numbers go up, there's a good sign because people got the confidence to report it, which is, as you say, there is important there. Now, obviously, there's, you know, when we spoke on the end of the week, you were dashing out because there'd been a mosque attack in Birmingham. We're hearing of attacks in Dover as well. So this is not just about one to one, is it? There's something organised behind this.
Well, absolutely. And I think over the past few years, I mean, just looking at the what the counterterrorism units across the country have been focusing a lot of attention on is far right extremism. And we're seeing that that's where the bulk of the issues are, really. And it becomes more what's the word, like focused and honed in on when you look at the recent incident in Dover where the man who ended up killing himself, you know, threw the petrol bomb, and, you know, his whole Twitter feed or social media was about attacking Muslims and trying to target Muslim children. And so these things aren't taken in isolation. It's not attacking refugees. I mean, his own kind of reason for doing it effectively was because of, and his motivation was because they were Muslim as well. So these things are kind of, they what's the word? They kind of interconnect. There's,
yeah.
They overlap.
But at the heart of it, it sounds like, you know, it's the evil in people's hearts. You know, it's racism there. And Muslims seem to be very much at the focus of that.
Well, it seems to be the case, unfortunately. And what we're trying to kind of do, one of the things to kind of push back against what we're seeing is try to kind of see what legislative protection can be offered effectively. And even the wording of Islamophobia, I think we're getting the definition, the wording that I said at the beginning said it's rooted in racism. And the fact of the matter is that victims of racially motivated hate crimes, the victims have more support. Whereas religiously motivated hate crimes have less kind of legislative backing or legislative support. There's one particular legislation, which is the Racial and Religious Hatred Act, I think of 2006. And when you kind of look at the bar that needs to be met for someone to be found guilty of a religiously motivated hate crime under that particular act, it's so high that since its inception, only six people have been caught under it, whereas because it's so difficult to prove.
How do you portray the best of Muslim people and Muslim community? Because I know so many Muslims who are, you know, they don't need to justify themselves as human beings any more than the rest of us. But how do you do that in your job? How do you encourage people?
The Muslim community has been part and parcel of Britain for over a century. In fact, it goes way longer. And Muslim civilization has been part of European history for centuries, from Andalusian Spain and the support during Renaissance and all these kind of the golden age of the Islamic Empire. All these kind of things have a role to play in kind of building the relationship or building the understanding of between cultures. But I think what I want to kind of say really about the issue of justifying is I don't think we see it in the case of trying to justify our role. But I think anyone who kind of anyone who's truly looking at the situation from a minority from the minority community perspective is that we have to go sometimes above and beyond what the indigenous white kind of people have to kind of show their love for their country, or you know how patriotic they are, or whatever the word is, and it's seen across minority communities, and so we have to kind of shout out about you know, the fact that we've achieved sporting excellence or we've achieved political, you know, representation.
And also, XYZ. You know, Muslims are at the heart of supporting the Royal British Legion at this time of year as well, as we, you know, as we head towards Remembrance Sunday. And that, you can't get a bit any more British than the Royal British Legion and the support that you can give.
Well, this is, I mean, part of the exhibition is talks about the support of young of Muslims in the war and World War One and Two and things like this. But I think this is part of the issue that we have to kind of try to support portray ourselves in one way. And I just want to give one anecdote that I kind of heard yesterday at a conference with the Black Educators Conference with the NEU, and there was a Muslim teacher there who said that my daughter came back and I found her in the toilet trying to scrub the mendy off.
Right.
And I said, what are you doing? She goes, oh, they were making fun of me at school. She goes, because she lived in a predominantly white area. What did she do? She invited all the kids from her class and her parents to an Eid party at her house. And she brought mendy artists and stuff like this. And then she kind of just educated them. Yeah. And she goes, at great expense, you know, personal expense. It costs a lot to get this thing going. So, but she goes, that investment that I did to kind of show that this is who we are, we're part of society. This is, and now, I mean, you know, it's they're coming over to our house now. They know we're accommodating. They know who we are. And some of the people in attendance were like, why did you have to do that? Why did you have to go that far, that, you know, do so much to do that?
Right, indeed. Language is important, isn't it? Really important. And we've heard, you know, without, again, making this a political one, but I hear words like invasion used at times.
Yeah, I think language absolutely matters. And I think prior to that, we heard the word swarms of migrants and invasion. Yeah. And I think some of the reporting that's come from some of the media down south, where obviously this incident is happening, that they're using language like our residents here are at the front lines. And like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Pitching that back to us in the media. What can we do?
Well, I'm not going to kind of tell the media what to do. I just be responsible. Do the job as it's supposed to be done in terms of seeking the truth, not taking the first claim that's been put forward, prodding and poking every kind of statement that's made, trying to get through to the bottom
Abdullah Saif from Muslim Engagement and Development. You're listening to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. Now, Simon Archer is the manager of the Bilston Business Improvement District and also is the publisher of West Midlands magazines. They have lots of events over in Bilston. I asked him to tell us how they're going and what ones they've got in the future.
So we just did, for half term week, we did Trek and Treat, which I'm very pleased to say I came up with that name. That's the one thing I've contributed to Bilston anyway.
It works
so
well.
It's sort of an Easter egg hunt with a Halloween theme. So they have to trek around the town, and then at the end, when they bring all the answers back to the clues, they get a treat. So that works particularly well each year. Very popular. Hundreds of children, families take part.
And it's important for the, again, bringing people together. We've had a bad few years of being able to get out there. Probably good for the shops as well. You'll probably tell me in a minute or two. But that celebration of community, really important.
Yeah, massively so. I think we've got a great community all over the Black Country. But obviously with me Bilston hat on, I have to be a little bit biased. It's just nice to be able to do something free. Everybody's watching the pennies. Gets the kids a bit of exercise, gets people to walk around the town and see parts of Bilston that they might not normally walk to. Some people just come to the market and then go home. So we're taking them up the top, down the bottom, around the middle and all the rest of it. So, it's good all round.
And when do your lights go on, your Christmas lights?
So Christmas lights switch on week for various parts of the city is at the end of November, and Bilston's is on the 25th. So that's the Friday.
Right.
And I believe Wensfield is the day before, the Thursday, the 24th, just to give that a mention before I get told off by my neighbours, because I am a Wensfield resident.
Yeah, indeed. We've got to cover everything indeed we have. Well, let's stick with Wensfield for a minute. I noticed one of your magazines, 50th edition coming up for Wensfield. I don't know where the others are up to in the table there, but 50. Well done.
Yeah. Wensfield was the first one we did, starting in 2014. And I sort of stumbled across this bit of information, actually. One of my readers rang up saying, "Have you got a copy of the last Wensfield magazine?" This was the August issue. So she said, "I've got every one, I've collected them."
Wow.
I said, "Well, wow, that's really good. That's made me day. Thank you for telling me that." And I came off the phone and said to my wife, "I wonder how many copies she's got. How many have we actually done? Let's have a quick count up." We lost two during COVID, as you'd imagine. And we counted up. We were on 49.
Wow.
And the October-November issue, which has just come out, was the 50th. So we sort of hurriedly put a few things together to sort of celebrate, piece in the magazine, had some postcards made and sent out to all the people that contributed over the years. And it just sort of, it made me smile, because I think when I started it, people said, "Wensfield magazine? Wensfield?"
Yeah. You'll never catch on.
You won't get enough. There's not enough going on in Wensfield to support a magazine. Well, you were wrong.
Yeah,
you
proved them wrong. Let's not quote them along there. Now, I know you're also involved in what I think is a fantastic event every year, and that's the Wolverhampton Young Citizen of the Year. I've had the honour of meeting a few and working with one as well. Jude Aston has done some sports stuff with us as well. Really inspirational young people. Now, that's all starting again. You're a part of the organising of that.
Yeah, I've been invited to take a more active role. I've supported the event, the competition, since I've published the magazines, in terms of getting the message out there and encouraging people to nominate young people for the award. But from the next one, I'll be part of the committee, so
right.
Lending my knowledge, experience, whatever
that
is.
Does that make you a judge as well? Will you become a judge?
I don't know whether I've got to that elevated role yet,
right,
Chris.
Okay.
I think stepping stones. I'm going to run before I can walk.
It's a great competition, though, isn't it?
It's fabulous. And I go to the award ceremony every year, and it could be my imagination, but it just feels like the calibre gets better and better. And I don't mind, I'm 6'2" and 16 odd stone, and I don't mind admitting that I shed a tear when they're reading some of these nominations, some of the things that these kids do. Sorry to call them kids, young adults.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just amazing. And you know, I think I do my bit for the community, but some of these people put me to shame.
Well, this is amazing. And one of the things is it balances out some of the news we often get around young people. And there was the old saying about truth and lies, isn't there, that a lie's halfway around the world before truth has got his boots on. I think that's the same with good and bad news as well. And we've got such fantastic, inspirational young people across the city. When can people begin to nominate? Because I think even if you get nominated, you get a certificate, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly when the nominations open, but we'll tell them next year.
We'll tell them when we know.
Yeah, I think we've asked if one of your team can be part of the organising committee next year as well. So there'll be plenty of publicity going out there. But early 2023. So plenty of time. We've only just had the last one. So
yeah. Well, I saw Charlie in the week when she does a show on a I don't know what night it was in. It was between 6 and 7, and she's very enthusiastic about it. So she's going to become our Wolves Young Citizen of the Year correspondent. I think it'd be the way that we will do. No, it's great things happening. And I did chat last year, and I didn't realise you were involved with Let Us Play. And did chat last year because there's some award winners down at that place as well, isn't that? That's another great charity.
Yeah, it's been quite a good time for the charity, actually, in terms of raising the profile. So a few months ago, the two ladies who run the charity on a day-to-day basis, that's Claire McKen and Kim Hatton, were awarded the BEM, which is the British Empire Medal.
Indeed.
And they don't give those away lightly. So that was a massive boost to the charity and a fantastic accolade for the ladies who thoroughly deserve it. I can't praise them highly enough. And then... again, recently, last Sunday, this time last Sunday, I was in Birmingham and we picked up the QAV, Queen's Award for Volunteering, which is the equivalent of an MBE for charities. So again, these things aren't just given away. You have to earn them.
Yeah.
In fact, Wolverhampton had a really good day because there was the Staffordshire Regiment Association, who I'm good friends with quite a few of the people who run that. The youth, the Way Youth Zone, was also given a Queen's Award for volunteering.
Yeah.
And I think we could be one of the last group of people ever to get one. Because
indeed.
Obviously from now on, it'll be a King's Award for volunteering.
Well, I know.
And I'm not sure in my lifetime we'll ever have a queen again.
No, I think they are, and over the last couple of years, then I had the privilege of chatting. I think 7 award winners, not this year, obviously. The previous 2 years as well had them all on, so we'll be following that one up as well. Let's go back to Bilston Market. When people are out there for shopping, and we want to encourage people to shop locally. There's lots on the Shop Wolverhampton website. Sometimes you can do stuff online, but go down there and enjoy it. And when you're down there, I notice you've got a pop-up COVID-19 vaccination centre in there as well for the next few days. Been there for a few days, there for a few more days as well. So it's sort of all-together service, a real holistic service down in Bilston.
Yeah, you mentioned John Denley a few moments ago, and that's his team who are out and about, just trying to encourage people to kind of do the right thing, I'm going to say that. Make sure they're boosted, make sure they're protected through the winter months. It isn't going away. You know, it's not as rife as it was, but we just need to make sure that it's managed. So if people do want to get down, I can't remember the exact dates, but I'm sure you can look them up and share with your listeners later on.
I think next couple of days that they're certainly there as well, because I was checking out, you were still there when we were having our chat, so I think it's still there as well. Really important, and I know, you know, we chat to John regularly about the importance of going to where people are and trying to get that news out. And I must admit, you know, I sort of try to keep up to date with my jabs. It was a good reminder to me, actually. I'll probably do another one soon as well, because they do wear off and you do need to keep topping up there as well. And that's it. We were chatting away, and it's a sort of a germ of an idea at the moment, and that's this idea of Make Music Day. You've seen it happening elsewhere, and it's sort of, but you want to do a Bilston version of it. You know, we could give that a bit of a boost, couldn't we?
Yeah, I think it's in its early days. We're having preliminary discussions. It's a nationwide thing. It happens in June every year, June the 21st. I think the only issue I have with it is June the 21st next year is a Wednesday, and you can't have much of a worse day to do something in Bilston than a Wednesday, because some of the businesses take the opportunity to close for a half day. There's no market on. So I did favour doing it later in the week, but the guy said, well, you can't be part of Make Music Day nationwide if you don't do it on the 21st. So we've got to fathom that one out.
Let's just do Bilston, you know, let's have a Bilston special.
Yeah, I think we might just do next year's on the Friday and or the Saturday or something and see how it goes. But yeah, basically, it'll be a free event. It'll involve music and it'll be in Bilston. More than that, I haven't quite fathomed out yet, but I haven't got as far as Christmas yet. So, we've just quickly moved across the events in Bilston. I must mention, I'm a bit naughty with this. We've just secured an ice rink for Bilston.
Ah, right.
And I put a little picture on our Facebook page the other day, just as a bit of a teaser.
Right.
Which got people all very excited. Where is it? When is it? And I didn't give them any information deliberately. Because I just wanted to see what the kind of response was. And let me tell you, it was more than positive. So right. I'm very excited that we're going to have a 8 days of people skating around, doing Torville and Dean impressions and all the rest of it.
That's Simon Archer, the Bilston Business Improvement District Manager and also publisher of West Midlands Magazines. You're listening to the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. Liz Rowe is the Operations Director of Community Transport in Bilston. When she came into our studios, first of all, I asked her to tell a little bit about community transport over in Bilston.
So just a little bit of an overview of the organisation as a whole, I suppose. Yeah. We've been running for almost 60 years, doing some really, really good work in the community. We've got bases up in the northeast of England. We've got a bit of a base in the middle of the country in West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And then we're based across the West Midlands. So we're based in Coventry, Birmingham. And Bilston.
Yeah.
So we run our passenger services from there. We've got a furniture warehouse there. We do driver training. So we do, yeah, we do lots and lots of all sorts of stuff, good stuff for the community. But I don't think, you know, we need to get more people in Bilston to know that we're actually there because we're tucked away in the corner. We're hidden.
Oh, very well
hidden.
We'll have to find you. We had a day of not getting where we need to be, so they must make sure they get to community transport. I must admit, I was surprised. I went to the shop Wolverhampton.com. I obviously saw your link there. Lots of other businesses on there as well. Really good website to go to find out where people can shop local. Saw CT Transport and I remember Community Transport. I do my little test and, you know, back in the day, and was really surprised to see the extent of what you do. And the furniture is a big part of what you do as well, isn't it?
It is. It's so in essence, really, the furniture we sell is there to kind of support the charitable aims that we've got.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting people out and about, reducing loneliness, social interaction for people, accessible transport. So we've got a big warehouse in Bilston from which we sell furniture, and we've got a shop in West Bromwich.
Right.
So that part of what we do is it supports the other parts that we do, and we're always trying to branch out and look at other new things that we can do. And now we're looking at CT office furniture as well.
Right.
So yeah, we're evolving and modernising.
It's part of being a kind of a charitable organisation nowadays. You've got to be a bit of a social enterprise, haven't you? You've got to find out. It's okay, giving out's easy, isn't it? But it's actually, how do you keep going? How do you keep the money coming in? And this is a way by which you're helping people, also helping the planet. I know that. It's a big part of, you know, what you try to do.
Absolutely. And we are not, you know, for any business, and any charity, we've got to move with the times. We've got to understand what people want and provide those services in the best possible way that we can. You know, being in existence for 60 years, we've had to change a lot over the years.
Right.
And in my time with community transport, I've seen a lot of change.
Mm.
All for the good. Fantastic organisation to work for.
And how long have you been there?
15 years now. Yeah. So
you must enjoy it to stick around that long.
I really, really do. I mean, you know, some days you think, it's not a good day today. Mostly Mondays. I don't like Mondays. But it's a brilliant charity to work for. We look after our employees. We've got a brilliant ethos. We help people in the community. It's lots
of volunteers too.
We work with a lot of volunteers, a lot of work placements. We've had lots of volunteers come with us and then stay with us and then continue into employment with us, or we upskill them to go elsewhere. It's a really, really good family It's not a family business, but it feels like that way. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you've made the choice to be in the charitable sector, I've put it that way, and you've been there a long time. Sort of what drives you to be in that? Because I'm sure with your organisational skills, you could be off somewhere else earning more money and doing that, but this is close to your heart.
Yeah, it is. There's something about community transport that it kind of hooks you in. So once you get there, you know, you really start caring about what it is that what you're trying to achieve. So every day I go in is about doing the best for people that we can, and that's what drives me forward, and that's what drives everybody who works there forward. We've got fantastic people who work with us, and that's our aim.
And I noticed as well, people can shop online, have a look at what you've got available there. I was having a little play around. I went to communitytransport.org/shop, which is not easy to say, but easy to do. And then you click on, obviously, the Bilston link, and you've got everything there. And really well priced, because obviously you're recycling, you're bringing it into the budgets of people, really, who may be in great need.
Absolutely. So over the years, as with everything, the prices that we charge have had to go up because increased fuel costs or everything. But we always try and keep it as low as we possibly can in order for people to access furniture that may not be able to access it otherwise. But yes, we have dragged ourselves kicking and screaming into the 21st century.
And Liz will encourage people as often as we can to come and find you. We talked about finding you. Where are you? Tell it to when people are going, where is it?
Okay.
How to get there?
So we're on the Barton Industrial Estate on Mount Pleasant.
Yeah.
But we're right at the back. So you go as far as you can and you'll see us on the right hand side. We've got two warehouses there with our sign in up there. Right. So love people to come along, have a look, see what we've got, browse our website.
That's Liz Rowe from Community Transport. If you want to shop online with them, you can go to communitytransport.org/shop. It's easy for me to say. And click onto the West Midlands tab there and you can see what you can get from Community Transport, or you can call in to visit them over in Bilston. You're listening to the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. Councillor Beverley Mamenabadi is the local councillor for Ettenshaw and also the cabinet member for children and young people. Lots of activities all the time. I asked her how half term had gone and what she got in the pipeline for the future.
Yeah, it's going really well. So I visit a number of our providers in the city over half term. So everything from martial arts to arts. We had an organisation called the Real Arts Workshop providing arts, but with sign language as well. A real fun-packed week for children and young people in the city. Hundreds of young people took up those activities. We actually filled capacity really quickly, and they were over that half term they were totally funded by our council. So it was really important for us that families and young people have something to do.
No, Alex and Gary, great friends of the show here. Alex did a weekly thing right when first lockdown was on. He came on every week and they gave free resources to what you can do at home to keep yourself sane. No, that's really, really good. And an important part of supporting young people, bringing them out, bringing them together. Food's a lot of part of this as well. So that's obviously helping family budgets too.
Yeah, we know that, you know, the cost of living is a real crisis for everyone at the moment, but even more so with, families and individuals who have dependents. So during those activities, we're making sure that children get hot lunch, get something to eat, and that's less pressure on families. If you think they save money on gas and electric, as well as food, I think it goes a really long way in helping families in what's a really difficult time for them at the moment.
Well, you're taking away that kind of terrible choice of heat or ease, aren't you, by helping feed the children, which is really important. Now, young people have been leaving care, celebrating that some independence there as well. Again, another great news story.
Yeah, so we recently celebrated Care Leavers Week. So Care Leavers in the city, you will have heard me talk about before, as a local authority and as a city council, we see ourselves when we are their corporate parents, and I guess that week was just to mark Care Leavers Week and just celebrate, I guess, the progress that they've made over the last few years. We had such a jam-packed week for them. We had some of our care leavers who now have children of their own, we arrange some activities for their children to come and have soft play. I went along to a beauty night, which was probably the most popular. We did face masks, henna. All the young people got lush gift sets. there was a scavenger hunt. There was independent living skills being taught. You know, things as basic as, you know, how to change a light bulb when you live on your own. Things that traditionally, you know, your parents would teach you living at home. So as their corporate parents, we're bringing our young people in and teaching them those skills.
Right. No, that's superb. And it's inspiring, it's encouraging, and it's when you get to that kind of point, really, when, you know, some of the most vulnerable children, young people in the city, and they get to that point of independence, their own children, standing on their own feet, celebration. It's I know it's something that's closest to your heart, really.
Yeah, it is. And one of our care leavers actually recently won Young Citizen of the Year in Wolverhampton as well, for the work, I guess, that he's doing in giving other care leavers a voice. You know, we don't know it all. We don't always get it right. And again, if I go back to the cost of living crisis again, you know, this is affecting our care leavers in the city, because if you think of young people who traditionally are struggling, who would go to their own parents for that extra 10, 20 quid for a top up on the electric or for food, our care leavers are coming to us as their corporate parents. So one of the initiatives we've recently launched is making sure that we are issuing our care leavers in the city with £40 extra to top up their electric, gas and for food. And that's in addition to council tax exemption for care leavers as well. So I guess that wraparound corporate parental package to make sure that young people in the city whose birth parents haven't been able to look after them, we take on that role.
I saw you're part of a video encouraging people to become councillors, think to go down that particular route. And you know, as someone who was the youngest councillor of the year, youngest councillor in the country, or whatever you were, and a few years ago, not too long ago, I just wonder what kind of encouragement you got for people who might want to go down the same path as you, and why you became a councillor.
I guess I'd say that the main things about becoming a councillor are, don't worry if you don't know too much about politics. I think that can put people off sometimes. The most important thing is that you care about other people. You really want to make a difference in the community that you live in. I come from a third sector charity background, and I think that, you know, even for our opposition councillors, I'd like to say all of us got into it because we want to make a difference and we want to make a change. The politics can come with it as well, but you can also stand as an independent if that sort of thing doesn't interest you. So if you've got a passion for helping people, come along to one of the Becoming a Council events, which will be advertised on the City Council website soon, and just see what it's all about. You really can make a difference in your community. So we know we've got these people all over the city, but I guess that becoming a councillor may not be something they think they want to do for whatever reason, but I'd encourage them to come and explore.
That's Councillor Beverly Mimenabardi, the Cabinet Member for Children and Young People. You're listening to the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. Councillor Stephen Simpkins is the Deputy Leader of the City Council. He's also a proud local councillor over in Bilton East and the Cabinet Member for the Inclusive Economy. When he came to join me in the studio, first of all, I asked him, you know, why is the Leader of the Council away in India at the moment?
Left out in the cage to the city, more than happy to do. It's important that we look not just insular into our city but outwards, and that's the reason why we want to attract as many businesses, and that's the reason for the trip. And it also, I believe that in his capacity of the Combined Authority for an Economic Development, we've got a big Asian community, we've got a big Indian and Pakistani community, as others, in this city, and it's important that we connect and make trade links. Really, I think it's important to sell our story of Wolverhampton about the investment that's coming in. And that's another reason why we need to attract international businesses across the piece. You know, I think there's probably two ethoses where you battle with austerity, or do you look to the future and see if we can build them links and grow our businesses, not just here in Wolverhampton, but for businesses in India and Asia to come and access some of our stuff that we produce and we do. And that's important for us to do.
Sorry, Stephen. Yeah, and this is obviously West Midlands wide. I see the Combined Authority very much part of this. Andy Street, the Mayor, as well. So it's kind of cross-party. It's actually saying, you know, the West Midlands, we've got to fly the flag. We've got to shout out loud and try to attract business in?
You know, Liz will probably stand the test of this, that communities like Bilston, Wolverhampton and across the West Midlands are really resilient. And the thing that really surprises me is we don't shout enough and praise enough about our resilience. So in times of austerity, what we need to do is come together as a communities and business communities and say, what can we offer, but what can we gain? And I think that's the very essence of the trade visit to India for us to do that. And there's opportunity for us to learn as well. So it's a two-way learning street. We can learn lessons about India, and we can also learn, India can learn lessons about Wolverhampton and the West Midlands, where we want to project our future to be.
And I'm reading stuff about devolution in different ways, down to county level, and that down to West Midlands level, down to city level, maybe, I don't know. Maybe it's just rhetoric at the moment, but it always sounds good to me because it sounds like decisions are being made locally.
That's the very ethos of democracy, that the local decisions are took by local people, and that's what we want to do. So what we need to do is we need to make sure that if there is devolved powers that come to the West Midlands, that we have the right powers that come to Wolverhampton City Council, same Sandwell, same Dudley, same Birmingham, because we know we've got our feet on the ground. What's really needed? We need the combined authority as the cloak across the West Midlands to say, this is what they need, and we'll step out the way. So it could be a land grab of local authorities' powers. It's got to be to enhance and then to take the message back. So that's the way that I see it, and that's the way I think it should be doing. And putting power into the people's hands is always good, because people know how their lives are affected. Politics should be positive, and politics should now, on Outreach Turn the Tide, reflect on what people's needs are to have a better life for all, not just the individuals at the top.
Well, we've heard about levelling up a lot. We hear that a lot, and we have a ministry in our city now, don't we? But levelling up, I think, you know, I look at it and it talks about places, but I also think about the people side of that as well. And you seem to be saying more, you have more of a people emphasis. Is that fair to say?
It should be, and it should be used. The purpose for any resource that comes in, call it levelling up, call it UK prosperity, should be about enhancing people's lives. For far too long, we've stagnated across the West Midlands for 50 years. Industry was sucked abroad for whatever reasons, but the DNA of the people is still there. So we're resilient people, that we've said. We're quite well educated, although we might not have good educational attainment. That's historic for the Black Country. You know, you can't just run machines without actually knowing exactly what you're doing. So we had some of the finest trades, and we could bring that back. There's an opportunity to bring that back in the new trades, the green agenda. You know, how do we solve the fuel problem? How do we solve the way that people live? Politicians should be connecting communities, not dividing them. And I think, you know, we've turned a tide now, and that's what it should be. So the investment that comes in, whatever you call it, has got to be useful for people and focused on people's outcomes.
Yeah.
You know, heavily infrastructured stuff. You can see what HS2 is doing. All right, it might be great when it's finished. I probably won't be alive when it's finished. But how does that reflect and bring people and opportunities to the West Midlands?
Sounds like you're sort of talking back, you know, the old Black Country saying, you know, you draw it, we'll mack it, you know.
Exactly,
that aspect that's going on there. Now, sad to see the lighthouse closing. And so we talked about the need for, you know, adapting and change, but not everybody makes it through these difficult times, do they?
It is absolutely horrendous. And again, if we had more support, we would have supported. But, you know, £330,000 worth of support that the lighthouse has had. What's happened, from what I can see, is we've had a patronage of 47,000. COVID dropped to 27. Something has to give.
Right.
You know, and most of the stuff that's caused that is because there's a low growth and there's low predicted growth. So it's in the entertainment sector that needs to be publicised, and we've done and tried as much as we can. And it's a sad loss. It's a sad loss for the people who've lost their jobs. But now it's for us in the authority to look back and say, well, what can we do? What can we do? We've done everything we can with that specific business. What's the lessons we can learn, and what can we do and facilitate? You know, I spend a lot of time meeting business people across Wolverhampton and some businesses across the West Midlands, and they're asking for help, but we need to understand what specific help. Grant funding has gone, as we've talked earlier about communities.
We're going to have this enterprise aspect.
Well, again, when we questioned the Metro Mayor at the last board meeting, I said, what's happening in the investment zones? Any car guarantee them going to continue? So, you know, it's above my pay grade, but if you sort of withdraw from everything, there's a downward spiral. Mm. So sometimes you have to have a calculated risk and move forward on what we can grow. The visit to India, what can we grow from the back of that? What can we grow? A different exposés across, you know, especially in regeneration, house building. But where's the trades and the technologies? They're still there. How do we then fit that into our university and college system?
That's Councillor Stephen Simpkins, the Deputy Leader of the City of Wolverhampton Council and also the Cabinet Member for the Inclusive Economy. And that's it from me for this week. You can join me between 7 and 10 on Sunday mornings alongside Debbie Hookston for Rise and Shine, and also then between 12 and 2 on Chris Allen in Conversation, or next week here on the Chris Allen Podcast, brought to you in association with WCRFM, number one for Wolverhampton.